Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. So today we're diving into a novel that feels less like reading a story and more like stepping into, well, a dream. Aaron Morgenstern's debut, The Night Circus.
It's quite something.
Yeah, we've looked through all the notes, the analyses, everything on Le Cirque de Rêve.
The Circus of Dreams.
Exactly. And our goal here is to give you, our listeners, a really solid understanding of what makes this book tick. You know, Morgenstern comes from this multimedia art and theater background.
And you can totally see that, can't you? The painterly descriptions, the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's pure visual storytelling almost.
Definitely. It's this blend of magical realism and like a Victorian aesthetic, the core premise, this incredible mysterious circus, Le Cirque de Rêve.
Right. All black and white, only opens at night, appears out of nowhere.
And it's actually the secret stage for a generations-old magical duel.
That's the hidden layer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Beneath all the wonder, the tents, the smells, the clock, there's this high-stakes wager.
A really dangerous one.
Yeah, between these two ancient rival magicians. You've got Hector Bowen, who goes by Prospero the Enchanter.
Very theatrical.
Very. And then there's Alexander. Just Alexander.
Yeah.
The man in the gray suit. Much quieter, more analytical.
And they don't fight directly. They use apprentices, proxies. In this case, Celia Bowen, Hector's own daughter.
And Marco Alistair, an orphan Alexander picks out.
Mm.
And they're bound to this game.
A game where the rules are pretty terrifying. It goes on until one competitor is, well, gone.
Historically, that means dead. The loser dies. Simple as that. Or not so simple, actually.
Not simple at all, especially because the central question becomes, can they defy this? These two people, Celia and Marco, they're supposed to destroy each other.
But they fall in love. Completely, irrevocably. So instead of destruction, they start creating together, building this magnificent thing. Can that change fate? That's what you're asking as you read.
Let's dig into that a bit. Their upbringings, their training, it sets up this fundamental conflict, doesn't it? Reflecting their mentors.
Oh, absolutely. They're like night and day. Celia's training under Hector, it was intensely physical and frankly, incredibly cruel.
Her magic is described as innate, right? Corporeal.
Exactly. It comes from her. She needs her body, her senses to change things, to transmute matter, mend broken objects, that kind of thing.
And the training method, it's hard to forget.
Yeah, it's brutal. Hector starts by like systematically breaking the bones in her hand and then instantly healing them over and over.
Wow.
Yeah. To teach her control through agony, basically. It grounds her magic in this very raw, painful reality.
Okay, so then you have Marco, totally different path.
Completely. Alexander finds him, this orphan boy, and teaches him magic from books. Sigils, theory, it's all intellectual.
So less physical, more manipulation of perception.
Exactly. It's about atmosphere, connection, illusion. His training was cold, very isolated, all in the mind, you know. Logic versus this, like raw power Celia has.
So you've got these two opposing forces trained in completely different ways. They need somewhere to compete, right? An arena.
And that's where the circus is born. Almost by accident, it seems, around 1884, 1886.
Right. This theatrical producer, Chandresh Christoph Lefebvre,
yeah.
He has this grand vision.
Yeah, he gathers this amazing team, designers, engineers, performers. He calls them his conspirators. They're all in on creating something unprecedented.
But they don't know the real reason for it.
Nope. And it turns out the venue, Le Cirque de Rêve, isn't exactly neutral ground from the start.
Because Marco's already there.
Mm-hmm. Alexander places Marco secretly as Chandresh's assistant in London. So Marco's influencing the design, the very structure from the inside before it even opens. He's literally weaving the foundations of their battlefield.
And that aesthetic he helps shape. It's unforgettable, stark, black and white, just touches of silver, gray.
It creates that perfect mood. Elegant, timeless, deeply mysterious. You get that iconic opening line. The circus arrives without warning. It is simply there when yesterday was not.
Chills. It just sets the stage perfectly.
Instantly. And it establishes this kind of magical contract with the audience, too. The dedicated fans, the reverse, the dreamers.
And they have their own little identifier.
Yeah, just a single splash of red, a scarf, a flower, something against their otherwise monochrome clothes. It's like they're part of the secret.
A secret society, almost.
Kind of. And something else happens on opening night, which is pretty crucial later on. The twins are born.
Oh.
Poppet and Widget.
Right, into the circus troupe. And they're special.
Very. They become these anchors for the magic. Poppet can see glimpses of the future, and Widget can read the past of objects and people just by touching them. They're important.
Okay, so the circus is open. The players are in place unknowingly. The duel officially kicks off around 1886, but it's not what you'd expect, is it? No flashing spells or battles?
No, not at all. It's creative. Their magic is channeled into making things. They compete by adding new tents, new attractions, new wonders to the circus.
It's fascinating because they're meant to be in this deadly competition, but it becomes this artistic call and response.
That's a perfect way to put it. They're performing for each other. In a way, even before they know who the other is.
There's Celia with her physical magic.
She creates these incredible, tangible marvels. The ice garden is the big one, right? This stunning, completely frozen environment, intricate and beautiful, real solid magic.
And Marco counters that.
He counters with illusion, with atmosphere, things like the labyrinth of clouds, constantly shifting, playing with perception, vast, intricate, but maybe less solid.
But wait, if the goal is destruction, why make things beautiful? Why not just, you know, sabotage the other person's tent?
That's the brilliant twist, I think. Their dedication isn't really to their mentors or the rules of the game. It's to the magic itself, to the art.
They respect the craft too much.
Exactly. They're the only two people on Earth who truly understand what goes into creating these things. So their magic starts to harmonize. It intertwines. Celia builds something. Marco adds a layer of atmosphere or illusion that enhances it.
Making the circus even more magnificent.
Way more than either could have done alone. It shows how their opposing styles, Celia's physical, Marco's theoretical, actually complement each other perfectly.
Yeah.
Collaboration emerges from rivalry.
And that synergy, that magical connection, that's how they find each other, isn't it?
It is. It's their magical signature. Around 1895, Marco finally identifies Celia through the way their magics interact, and he arranges a meeting.
And the connection.
It's immediate, profound, yeah. Like recognizing a part of yourself you didn't know was missing. Kindred spirits, truly.
So the competition just shifts.
It completely transforms. From about 1895 to 1901, it becomes this clandestine, magical love affair conducted through their creations. They meet secretly in the ice garden, in hidden corners of the tents they built for each other.
There's that amazing line from Marco.
Oh, yeah. He tells Celia, I would have written you myself. A sea of ink would not be enough. But you built me dreams instead.
Wow. Their magic literally becomes their love language.
It does. But, love makes things complicated, especially in a magical death match.
Right. Because other people are involved. Enter Isabel Martin.
Isabel. The tarot reader, the fortune teller at the circus.
Yeah.
And Marco's former lover.
And she notices Marco pulling away.
She does. And out of jealousy, maybe desperation, she casts a binding spell. Not directly on Celia, but on Marco, trying to keep him tied to the circus.
Mm.
And maybe, she hopes, to her.
But the spell has unintended consequences.
Big time. It's powerful. And ironically, it actually strengthens the magical web holding the entire circus together.
Mm.
It sort of locks everything down.
Which sounds okay at first, like stronger magic, more stable circus.
You'd think so. But it makes the whole system rigid, brittle. By 1901, 1902, the energy, the magic, it's straining everything, the structure, the people.
And this ties into that theme of confinement we see emerging.
Absolutely. The original conspirators, Chandrish, the clockmaker, Herr Tyson, the contortionist, Tsukiko, they realize they're trapped.
Magically bound.
Yeah. They can't age, but they also can't leave the circus. It's become a beautiful prison. Chandrish especially starts to crack. He gets paranoid, erratic. He senses something is wrong, some hidden machinery, but he can't grasp it.
The wonder starts to curdle.
It really does. The fun is definitely over. The consequences of Celia and Marco's secret game, their love story, it starts to spill out violently.
The accident.
Yeah. The magical imbalance, the strain.
Yeah.
It causes a freak accident during a performance. Someone dies. A member of the troupe.
And that forces their hand.
Completely. Celia and Marco have to face it. Their beautiful, creative duel is now actively endangering everyone they care about.
And just when things couldn't get worse.
Right. Hector Bowen's ghost shows up. His vengeful spirit is still tied to the game, and he's determined to make Celia win no matter the cost. He's pushing her towards the original fatal conclusion.
So by 1902, the situation is impossible.
Utterly impossible. They can't concede that means death for the other, but they can't continue the game. That means the circus and everyone in it will likely be destroyed by the unstable magic.
What do they do? There's no way out.
They make one. They choose defiance. They meet at the heart of the circus, the central bonfire, which acts as this magical tether for the duel.
And instead of fighting,
they choose love.
Yeah.
And sacrifice. Celia performs this final, desperate, incredible act of magic. It's not something planned by the game. It's her choice, their choice.
She changes the rules.
She breaks the game entirely. She transforms both herself and Marco. It's like alchemy. They become incorporeal spirits.
So, not dead, but not human anymore.
Exactly. They're no longer physical beings, but they are permanently, eternally bound to the circus itself. They sacrifice their mortality, their physical lives, to save their creation and stay together forever.
They redefined winning. It's a stunning subversion of that tragic fate they were assigned.
It really is. They chose how the story would end. But the circus itself is now kind of magically adrift without its core duelists fully in charge in the same way. It needs a new anchor, a human element.
Someone to watch over it.
Precisely. And that's where Bailey Clark comes in. This young man from Massachusetts, completely devoted to the circus, a true rever.
The twins find him, right? Poppet and Widget.
Yeah, with Poppet's foresight and Widget's insight into the past, they know Bailey is the key. He represents that pure, unselfish love the audience has for the circus. Mm-hmm. He's stable, he's dedicated.
He gets the call.
Literally. Poppet finds him and tells him, flat out, someone needs to watch over the circus. Someone needs to keep it safe.
And he accepts. He leaves his ordinary life behind.
He does. He becomes the new caretaker, the proprietor, the human connection point that stabilizes the magic and ensures the circus can continue, protected.
So looking back at the whole tapestry, the big message seems to be about choice, doesn't it? Destiny versus free will.
I think so, yeah. True freedom isn't necessarily escaping your fate, but maybe grabbing hold of it and reshaping it, redefining the terms. Celia and Marco were fated to be enemies, destroyers. They chose to be eternal collaborators, lovers, protectors.
And that duality is everywhere in the book. The black and white visual isn't just cool, it reflects everything, right? Light, shadow.
Illusion, reality.
It's like creation, confinement.
Exactly. It's baked into the very aesthetic. And the clocks. We have to mention the clocks.
Herr Thiessen's masterpieces, they're everywhere.
They're this constant tick-tock reminder of time passing, of the rigid framework of fate that Celia and Marco are desperately trying to break free from. Time is the enemy of their love, the constraint of the game.
And ultimately, the novel feels like a celebration of artistry itself.
Definitely. The real magic, the true wonder, happens when Marco's theoretical atmospheric magic blends perfectly with Celia's tangible physical magic. It's a testament to collaboration being more powerful than rivalry.
What really makes it stick with you, though, beyond the plot, is how Morgenstern tells the story. It's not straightforward.
No, it jumps around in time, non-linear. It reveals history and backstory piece by piece, like assembling a puzzle, builds incredible mystery and suspense.
And those second-person bits.
Oh, the vignettes, yes. You walk through the gates, you smell the caramel. They're genius.
They really pull you in. You're not just reading about the circus. Suddenly, you are the visitor, the ultimate rever.
Exactly. It makes the reader an active participant.
Mm-hmm.
And it reinforces that core idea.
Mm.
The magic, the wonder, it needs an audience. It needs that belief, that dedication to keep it alive. It's incomplete without us.
So the legacy. It's the beautiful prose, the atmosphere.
It may be the idea that love itself is the most powerful magic.
Yeah.
It transformed this destructive game into something eternal.
Yeah. I think the lasting impression is that real magic lies in that kind of dedication, in pouring your whole self into creating something wonderful. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? What could you build with that kind of passion, and what would you do to protect it?
Hmm. A powerful thought to end on.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.